focusing on those areas of the brain, that when you go in looking for this raw compute, this raw reasoning power, this computer in the brain, and this area of the brain that focuses on just, you know, risk-reward trade-offs, what you find is just a complete mess. It's just a complete mess because you find motor circuits woven all into these brain circuits, and you build motor circuits, and it's down about running or walking. I care about, like, economics and finance and what we're doing when we're calculating, you know, whether this is a good trade to put on. But after a while, you realize that if your expectations are so at variance with the facts, chances are there's something wrong with your model. And that's when I stumbled into a talk given by a neuroscientist engineer at Cambridge. And they were asking, his group was asking a very basic question. And that question is, why do we have a brain? And the answer to this question is, I think, absolutely fundamentally leads into a completely different vision of what a human being is. And that's why I wanted to dwell on it a bit, because if you ever do something as insane as what I did, i.e. walk away from a high-paying job to a low-paying one, and you try researching the brain, I'm going to save you 5 years of misunderstanding with the next couple of slides. So they ask, why do we have a brain? Why do humans have a brain and some creatures like plants and trees don't have a brain? And they learn a lot from this critter here. It's a book called the bluebell tunica. It's like a sea sponge, except that in its larval stage, it swims around the seas like a fish, and it has a primitive brain called the cerebral ganglion. And this, in its larval stage, it swims around looking for rich feeding grounds. And when it finds these rich feeding grounds, it cements itself head first to the seafloor and then eats its brain and spends the rest of its life just gently swaying in the current, filtering nutrients from the passing waters. And the message they distill from this creature is this, that if you don't need to move, you don't need a brain. That the point of the brain is to plan and execute movement. It's not to sustain pure thought the way we sort of tend to think in the West, starting back with Plato. It's not to do that. There's no point in thinking unless at some point it issues in movement. And that is such a simple point, but its ramifications just spread out through your entire life and the way you think about things. Because you start to realize that we didn't grow out of our body and into a larger brain. The reason we grew a larger brain was to control a more sophisticated body. That they evolved together. And in fact, because what is extraordinary about humans is that we can learn movements we've never done before, that in some sense don't come naturally to us, and perfect them to an extraordinary degree, and no other animal can do that. Take skiing, for example. This isn't something we've been doing for a few hundred thousand years. We took to the slopes about 100 years ago, and now you see these teenage kids in a downhill race, descending what is almost a vertical cliff of ice, at almost 100 miles an hour, with a couple of milliseconds separating a gold medal from a deadly impact with a crash barrier. I mean, that is just an absolutely extraordinary achievement for a species that's never skied before. And we do that all in so many activities. And it may be that our crowning achievements, the form of human excellence that really belongs at the top of our pantheon, isn't so much the scientific theories, or the mathematical theorems we prove, or the books we've written, or the paintings we painted, it might just be our movements. But that is where real human excellence that really separates us from the animal world may lie. That's a completely different vision of what a human is. There's another thing that follows from that. If our brain is so constructed that its primary role is to plan and execute movement, it means that every time you think something, every time you receive a bit of information, every time you think through risks, your brain is quietly in the background figuring out what movement might ensue from this information. And so while it's doing that, it's preparing your body. It's changing your heart rate. It's changing your blood pressure. It's redistributing blood from one part of your brain, one part of your body to another. It is withdrawing it from your stomach and redirecting it to the big muscle groups. It's putting your immune system on high alert. It's changing your core body temperature. It's changing everything about you. And so you can often see this in a person's face when you talk to them. You can watch them and their eyes widen and then squint. Their complexion change, their facial expressions change. You're watching this changing weather in their face as they listen to what you're saying. But what you're seeing in the face is also taking place throughout